Hello, welcome to another episode of the On the MS podcast. My name is Jacqueline. I'm the creator, producer, and host. For those of you who are coming back, thank you so much for listening. It means a lot to me, and it means a lot to the survivors who are brave enough to come forward and tell their stories, that you all are all out there supporting them. And for those of you that this may be the first time that you're joining us, hello, welcome. So glad that you're here. On the MS, this is where the name came from. On the MS was something that Bob Meehan started in the Enthusiastic Sobriety support groups because he said that when he was in the penitentiary, which we're not entirely sure he ever was, that if you said MS, then you were on the MS, and that meant the person had to tell the truth. And it was this like hard rule amongst all of the, you know, murderers and criminals that he was around in the penitentiary. So whatever, who knows if that's true, but it's something that we all used to say, both on staff and in the group. And in 2005, when the first group of survivors started a movement similar to what we have today, they started a website called On the MS. And essentially it was saying, number one, we're the ones telling the truth. And number two, kind of taking that saying away from Bob and using it for survivors, which is awesome. So MS is actually a Yiddish word that means truth. So there is some reality to what Bob said it was about. We're just not quite sure where he actually got it from, because literally everything that came out of his mouth was not an original idea, and he stole from somewhere else. So we are now stealing it from him, and we use it for the podcast and just our, you know, at times just our survivor community in general. So On the MS podcast partners with the Enthusiastic Sobriety Abuse Survivor Community and Movement. You can find that movement at enthusiasticsobrietyabuse.com. And you can also find us on Instagram at ES Survivors, as well as on Twitter at that same handle. And then you can find the podcast pretty much anywhere under either On the MS or On the MS Pod, P-O-D. So go find us, follow, subscribe, like, especially go subscribe to the YouTube channel. I'm trying to build up subscribers there so that I can do just go live. You know, if something happens, or if there's somebody who, you know, wants to talk about something, and we're both just available at a certain time, instead of having to record and edit and publish, we can just go live on YouTube, and whoever is available can come watch us and chat, and, you know, do some real time conversations with people, which would be awesome. So I think I have to have 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. So tell your friends, tell your mom and dad, tell your dog walker, tell your dentist, whoever, to just go subscribe to the On the MS Pod YouTube channel so we can get that going. And again, I thank you all so, so much for your support. It means the world to me, and it means a lot to all the survivors who come on this podcast to tell their stories, because it's hard and it's scary to know that there are hundreds of thousands of you out there listening and cheering us on is amazing. So thank you. Thank you. So every now and then I do talk to survivors from other programs, which is what we have today. We have Robert Buckland. He's a survivor of the Agape Boys Boarding School in Stockton, Missouri. And I want to give you all a content/trigger warning for this episode. Robert went through a lot of shit, and there are some pretty horrific things that happened to him and to other people at this boarding school. So recording this podcast, I literally had nightmares the night, you know, when I went to bed that night. So I'm just warning you now. It's heavy, it's intense, it's sad, it's going to make you really mad. It's a lot. And I'm really glad that the Agape survivors are speaking up, and I can't imagine how scary it is for them knowing the kind of abuse they all suffered while they were there. So I just want to give a huge hug and like good for you to all of the people out there. And you can find them on Twitter as well. I think Robert's handle is Agape Boarding School, so or Agape Boys School, but they follow, you know, on the MS on Twitter and I think Instagram. So go find them, follow them, give them some support because they deserve it and they need it. And then also every now and then, I do talk to survivors of multi-level marketing companies. And yes, I say survivors because the kind of manipulation and abuse and gaslighting that happens in multi-level marketing companies is very, very similar to what happens in enthusiastic sobriety programs. So people who get out of MLMs are survivors as well. And I have a personal connection to that. I grew up in an MLM. And I realized that it has a lot to do with why I stayed in Bob Meehan's programs for 13 years. So I do also like to give them a platform. So if anyone was wondering why, you know, every now and then I'll have an MLM or anti-MLM advocate on the podcast, that's why. And also because they're just awesome people who are doing great work. And the anti-MLM movement has come a long way. We used to just be real mean. And now the community has become, for the most part, much, much more compassionate. And really the goal is to help people not join MLMs or help them get out of MLMs. And it's just an added bonus if one of them gets shut down, which one of them did recently. But we will talk about that with another guest farther on down the line. So for now, I'm going to stop talking and I'm going to introduce you to Robert Bucklin. See you on the other side. Hi, Robert. It's so nice to meet you and have you on the podcast today. How are you doing?
Good. I'm doing good. How are you?
I am doing well. Did we start talking on Twitter? Or did you send an email to the podcast? How did that start?
Actually, I think I saw you on Twitter and then I had found your email and I did send you an email.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, because we've kind of gone back and forth on Twitter and then we text. And so I was like, it's so interesting how I just meet different people. Sometimes I get messages on Instagram and sometimes it's email. And I just wanted to remember how that happened with us. So you reached out to me because you went to Agape, which it's a boarding school for men, right? Like they don't take women or girls or whatever, right?
Correct. It's they advocate as a boarding school for troubled teens for boys.
Okay. And so you are a survivor of Agape, and they are in some hot water right now, which we can talk about. So how long has it been since you left there?
It's been about 9 years almost since I left there.
And how long were you there?
I was there for just about 6 years.
I'm sorry. Did you say 6 years?
Yeah, 6 years. From when I turned 12 until a couple months after I was 18, because I have to stay and graduate.
Jesus. Okay, so let's talk about that for a second. I don't know a whole lot about boarding schools, but that seems like a long time to keep someone essentially institutionalized. Am I right about that?
Oh yeah, I would say I was, you know, there's not, I can probably count on single hand how many kids were there longer than me. And that school's been open for 30 years.
That's a long time. No, I'm just in shock right now. That's all. Go ahead.
I was adopted when I was 4 from Russia. And then I got sent away when I was 12 for 6 years. So I was almost at boarding school longer than I was with my adopted family.
Yeah. That's insane. So, if you're comfortable with it, do you want to tell us a little bit of your background and what happened and how you ended up at Agape?
Yeah, sure. So I was adopted from Russia when I was 4. I had 4 sisters, a good mom and dad growing up. I usually spent all my time with my dad. I was closer to him than my mom. And, you know, I was 12 years old, so I don't understand how bad I could have been.
Sure. Yeah.
I was just like I acted like a kid a lot of time. During the Agape application, I got back in my lawsuit a list of reasons why my mom sent me to Agape. And some of them were like, Robert's scared of the dark. He needs to be walked into the house if he's alone outside when it's dark. Robert hid like 10 candy wrappers under his mattress. Robert's backpack is very messy. Robert thinks he knows everything. Robert talks out of turn a lot of times. It's not like I didn't commit any crimes. I never did drugs.
Right.
It's just normal behaviors that kids do and that my mom just didn't want to put up with or didn't know how to parent in the right way.
Yeah. So let me ask this question really quick before we go on. So were your four sisters, were they biological sisters or were they a part of your adopted family when you were adopted?
So three of them were biological. They flew out to Russia to adopt me. And then they went back to obviously the States, and then they flew back out to Russia, and then they had adopted another girl from there. So two of us are adopted and three of them were biological to my mom and dad.
Okay. Okay. So you're not related biologically to any of them?
Correct.
Okay. Okay. So where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Greenwich, Connecticut. I was there from when I was 4 years old till I was 12.
Right.
My dad was an executive at a bank, and he worked in New York City. Pretty much traveled like every other week to different states or out of the country. So normally it was just my mom with us, but my dad was there a lot as well. My dad, you know, I looked up to my dad. My dad was a great person.
And you were really close to your dad, right?
Correct. Yeah, it wasn't my dad's choice per se to send me to school. It was about 99% my mother. Like even on the application process for Agape, everything was done by my mom. Not one thing was done by my dad.
Okay. And so why do you think she did that? Like, do you think she was just overwhelmed or like what? And I mean, if you don't want to talk about your mom, that's totally fine too. I'm more just asking out of curiosity.
No, I mean, it's just, I don't think she was overwhelmed. I think she just didn't know how to love a boy, you know?
Yeah.
That's honestly what I think it boils down to. It has nothing to do about what I did or anything. She just couldn't. I really don't know. It's something that I think about all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I would too, if I were you. And I wonder too, because you're 27, right? So this would have been 15 years ago. So early 2000s.
Yeah.
Right. So, I don't know that. I mean, that was kind of the heyday of stuff like that. And if that boarding school's been open for 30 years, so we're talking about it opened in the 90s, right? Which was that we just didn't know a whole lot about dealing with kids still. You know, there's tough love was still very much like the standard of how to deal with kids who weren't perfect children, you know? So it seems like maybe your mom thought like she was doing something good for you, because I assume, and this is kind of the next thing I want to talk about, I assume that Agape probably advertised itself as therapeutic.
Yeah, they did. They advertised themselves as a Christian school that, you know, changed men around through God. But nothing could be further from the truth, literally.
Right. And so how did she... So Agape's in Missouri. It's Stockton, Missouri, correct?
Correct.
So how did she... Like, why did she end up choosing... Because I assume there are probably some good boarding schools near where you lived. So how did she end up choosing Agape, you know?
So there was actually some other schools I was supposed to be sent to before Agape. But they had like waiting lists and stuff. Mm-hmm. And my mom didn't want to wait around. You know, she thought a Christian school would be good for me. Albeit my family wasn't Christian or religious at all. Like, maybe we'd go to church once a year for Christmas. I mean, if that, though, you know.
Right, but it that's definitely like something that people would trust. Like, okay, it's a Christian program. Christians are supposed to be about like love and accepting people and God and, you know, like all of these very wholesome ideals and principles. So them advertising themselves as a Christian institution, like that makes sense that, you know, your mom would trust them and think that that was a good place for you to go. Right.
No, I would agree. I think that, you know, that made her trust it more than just any of the other schools. Because I think I was supposed to go like to a space school, like astronomy, but they just had a really long list. And then I think there was one in Utah. I don't know. I don't remember the name. It was so long ago that I was supposed to go to.
Mm-hmm.
It was in Salt Lake City. And that one actually looked pretty cool from looking at the pictures from what I remember. But there were just too long of a list.
Yeah.
A waiting list.
Yeah. And she felt like it was urgent to get you somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So tell me what that was like. So did she drive you? Was it one of those situations where someone came and picked you up in the middle of the night? Like what, how did that work?
No. My dad actually flew me out there. I flew out to my dad. I think we flew into Kansas City Airport, and it was about a 3-hour drive from the airport. I was excited, but like to get away from my mom, but like I didn't know what to expect as well. You know, I was like excited to get away from the environment I'm in. And maybe like I don't know, boarding school, I thought it would be like a really cool place.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So you get there, and so what happens when you get there?
The first thing that happened was, you know, they took me down to the intake room, shaved my head.
Hold on. Did they explain why they were shaving your head?
I don't remember. I don't think so. I think they just said something like all the kids here are required to have shaved heads.
So was there like a military aspect to it? Like, was it that kind of boarding school?
Yeah, it was definitely military related. Like they... A lot of the things there were done off of what the military did.
Okay, got it.
We had like Alpha Company, Bravo Company, Charlie Company. The punishments were kind of like military. A lot of kids would leave there and go to the military. You know, and so they cut my hair. They made me change into like an orange shirt and some jeans. And I remember seeing my dad for the last time. And like I was crying and he was crying. And I was like, tell not to leave me. And then obviously left, he had to go.
Yeah. God, that had to be horrific for your dad.
Yeah. You know, at the same time, I'm thinking I'm only going to be there for a couple months a year, not 6 years.
Yeah. That
never crossed my mind one time.
Yeah. No, I'm sure it didn't. No. Oh my God. Okay. So you're heartbroken. Your dad leaves, they've shaved your head, they've put you in weird clothes. So where do we go from there?
From there, you know, it's at that time we were building, I think our school was downstairs and they were building a new school. I want to say new school, just a big classroom. They were building a new big classroom upstairs. So literally we were all helping build the new school. They didn't bring in like any outside people, like contractors or anything. It was just the students and staff doing all the work, literally. And so we built that new school.
That's again pretty typical of that military / Christian ideals and values, like, you know, good old hard work and, you know, blood, sweat, and tears. We'll shape them right up. So, okay. So you're building a school and you're 12. So you're doing like pretty much child labor.
No.
Free child labor.
Child labor, literally. You know, like I'm not a strong person. I wasn't a strong kid.
You're 12.
Yeah. Like, I'm a scrawny little kid.
Yeah.
So yeah, I even like today, I'm not like super strong.
Right.
It's, you know, we built the school. We would fix all the staff houses because all the staff there lived on the property in different houses. So we would, like, anytime their houses needed maintenance, we'd fix them. We would, like, go into town there and do a lot of work for the town, which the town would pay the school. And then, you know, we never got paid, obviously.
Right. So you were child labor. Okay, that's great. Good to know. So then what was the rest of it like? Like, did you go to school? Like, what was a day in the life?
I think we'd wake up like at 6 a.m. You know, we'd make our beds. We'd have bed inspection. If our beds weren't made right, like, you know, we would stand up for the day or what. I think there's different punishments. Then we'd get ready for the day, go to the shower bay. We'd read our Bible for about 30 minutes every morning. Then have breakfast and do like morning chores, clean the school, clean outside. You know, I think that lasted about a half hour. Everyone was assigned to different groups for different chores. Like whether it was you're helping in the kitchen or washing dishes, sweeping the school, sweeping the sidewalks outside, doing washing, whatever. And then sometimes you would go to school. Sometimes you'd be outside working for the day. I think for my first like month and a half, I was outside, like work. It was like rough working, you know, because they try to like break you down your first little bit of time there. So, you know, you're just outside working, like, and doing exercises, like the weirdest exercises.
Like, what do you mean by the weirdest?
You'd be like military crawling. Outside on the rocks, they would do something called the Indian Run, which was like my least favorite thing to do, where it's like you're in a line of 10 people and the first person, everyone's running, and the first person has to outrun the whole group and make it to the back of the line. And then it's all, everyone in that group has to complete the cycle before you guys are done. So you literally do like 20, 30, 40, 50 laps before you're done. And, you know, it's not, you don't get breaks, you don't get water, you don't get anything.
Yeah.
The kids would be like dropping flies.
Okay. So it sounds like a lot of those exercises, like that's also very military. Like that sounds like boot camp. You know, my husband's a veteran, so I know a lot about what happens in the military. So, okay. So we've got free child labor, which is against the law. Child labor is against the law, period, whether it's paid or not. We've got military style. They're having a 12-year-old do military style boot camp exercises. Did you say, were you going to school?
I would go to school. Yeah, I would go to school a lot during the weekends. Like Saturday morning, we would all be outside working, helping the property, or just doing literally pointless work. Like we'd haul rocks from point A to point B, point C, all the way back to point A. You know, we cut down all the brush and, you know, they would burn, like they'd have a brush pile that it would be burning, or different piles. That wasn't always necessarily brush, but like we'd have to carry stuff to the smoking pile where like you don't have proper ventilation. You don't have like mask or respirator or anything.
In most states, that's also illegal, but carry on.
Yeah, you know, like literally like, a lot of times, like, my eyes would be burning, or, like, just because you're literally standing right in front of the smoke pile, putting stuff onto it as it's burning, like, all day.
Yeah.
So, that wasn't good. The students, we are the ones who, like, literally built that property. Everything they had there, they never hired outside workers. Maybe once in a blue moon they would, but barely ever.
And there's pictures of that property that I'm definitely going to post.
I have pictures of students doing there's pictures of kids, like small little kids carrying barrels of hay, and the barrels of hay are bigger than the kids themselves. Like, and you could see like the pain in the kids' eyes, you know, like they're struggling to lift it, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you'd get, you know, you could get restrained, you could get punishment, stand up for the day or whatever. And during these work days, you'd get like one or two water breaks. Like you ask for water, they say no, wait for water break. And then when water break came, it'd be like a 5 to 10 second sip of water and then you're done. Like you don't get any more.
Yeah, that's okay. So it's just horrible. Okay, so working on the weekends. So you're in school during the week? Like, yeah, were you getting an education while you were there?
So Agape boarding school costs today, according to their website, costs like $52,000 a year.
Wow.
They educate you on something called the ACE program, which is not an education system at all. It's like a literally self-taught packet that you do. The classroom is one big classroom with like 140 kids. The staff members there aren't even qualified to be teachers. You know, like half the time there I cheated just because, I mean, nobody's helping me learn anything.
But so what are the staff qualified for? Like, do they have any qualifications of any kind?
I don't think so. I mean, okay. They all went to like, either they couldn't make it in their own lives and they went to Agape because they got to live there for free, or they went to Bible college.
Got it. Okay.
Like the one right there where a lot of staff members went to was Hiles Anderson College. I think that's in Indiana or Illinois. I don't remember. I mean, I think there was one qualified actually teacher, and it's hard. Like you can't get taught when there's 140 kids in one room and all different ages. And it's literally a self-learning packet. Like you do all the work yourself. You get taught it by yourself. It's not like you have a teacher in the class saying, hey, this is how you do this or this is how you do that. It's literally you're learning based off what the packet says, which is not learning at all.
Yeah. Did anyone grade them? I mean, was there any kind of accountability? Were there tests? Like, how did they handle, like, evaluating your education?
We would grade our own packets, but they would grade our tests. And a lot of times, you know, they would grade the tests, even if you did a bad or good job. Sometimes it didn't matter because they would grade your tests based off of your behavior. So if you were behaving badly, they would just fail you. And not like, it's not like you get the test back and you get the like, oh, this is what I got wrong or this or that.
Right.
You know, you would just see what you got, the score was. And, you know, the pastor of the school openly told people that he would fail people if they were behaving bad. So it was more merit-based than it was actually education.
Right. And do you know if they had to report anywhere?
No, they're... So in Missouri, like reform schools were all like, if I wanted to open a school in Missouri, I could. And as long as I say it's a religious school, I don't have to register it with like the Secretary of Education or any department of the government in the state. Like it's invisible. So they don't have to give like the grades or anything to anybody. There's nobody to hold them accountable. For example, so the company that accredited Agape Boarding School was founded by the owner of Agape Boarding School. I posted paperwork proving that. Like I have documents from Secretary of State where Jim Clementson founded that accrediting company, who was the owner of Agape and founder. And How can a company accredit you when you're the one that started that company and then your son's serving as a board member of that company?
So yeah, that's real fucked up.
I don't even know what a good word to describe it is.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's very unethical is a very simple way to put it, but there's some nuance there. And that's interesting because the programs that I was in, we have one in St. Louis, and they did not have to have any kind of licensing either. So they have no oversight over anything that they're doing. Now, the staff have to get certified through a state licensing board, and there's oversight over the staff because of their certification. But there's no oversight with the actual program and its curriculum or, you know, reports and record keeping, like nothing. There's nothing there. So that makes sense that there also is no oversight for schools like Agape, which is just, it's wrong. It's just wrong, and it needs to change.
And that same accrediting company that accredited Agape, so Jim Clementson was the founder of it, as well as I think the other founder, I have to look at my documents, but the other founder was the founder of Bethesda Girls Home, which got shut down by the state. And the other founder was his brother-in-law, which he was in charge of a school where a kid died. Like, so, I mean, I don't even know how that doesn't raise red flags at all.
Right. It's the question is, who is it going to raise red flags with? Like, that's the problem. It's like, we, you know, and that's what we're finding with some of the work we're doing with Bob Meehan's programs is we have to find the people to wave these red flags in front of, like, hey, this is going on and it's not okay, and you need to be aware of it and you need to do something about it. And it just seems like that's the case with a lot of, especially adolescent programs like Agape or, substance use disorder, mental health treatment programs in the country, is like, there's just very, like, they just kind of let them do whatever, as long as they meet these like very vague requirements, you know, that have more to do with like the facilities being physically safe for young people to reside in or, you know, be in and out of for counseling appointments or whatever. But it seems like as far as like how these kids are being treated and the kind of like philosophies that are being fed to them, like there's really no oversight for that. And that's the biggest problem with a lot of these programs. Like, for instance, in Georgia, the staff who have certifications, right? They have these certified alcohol and drug abuse counseling certifications. All you need in order to get that certification is a high school diploma. So you've got these people who have these certificates on their walls that say, I'm a certified alcohol and drug abuse counselor, but they may have had zero like advanced education in psychology or like child education, like nothing, zero, you know, and they're all clients. They were all former clients of the program. Like they only hire former clients, which is also twisted in its own way, but yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely an overarching message of all of us who are out here advocating for young people and trying to get some oversight in these programs, is like, they're doing more harm than good and something needs to be done about it, you know, like overall.
Yeah, I mean, it traumatizes so many boys after, you know, like there was a kid who just died, 18 years old, like 3 weeks ago, not even 2 weeks ago, from Agape. Like I don't want to say he committed suicide because cause of death has not been posted yet. But the dude was 18 years old. And he just, like, I can only imagine what he died from. The kid, did you see the other day where a man shot three police officers in Texas? That man was former Agape boarding school student. And he would get beat down by the staff. Like one time he came back into the dorm with two black eyes, a bloody nose, his shirt was ripped in half because he rolled a fake joint. Like they literally beat the fuck out of this guy, the kid. Beat the fuck out of this kid.
Yeah.
And when you do stuff like that, like I don't excuse certain behaviors, like his actions have no defense. But at the same time, what happens if he would have been sent to a school that actually like loved him or would have taken care of him? And a lot of kids from Agape, they go to prison, they die, they commit suicide.
Are those of you who were kind of advocating for some oversight with Agape. Are you doing any kind of research on that? Like, are you doing any kind of, like, do you have any data about
the graduates? Yeah, I'm actually going to start putting out surveys too, because I run a couple of Agape groups. And I know there's a couple other people that run a couple of Agape groups as well. I'm going to start putting out some surveys so we can have some data behind them.
Good.
I think it would be interesting to see what the data says, you know, like what did Agape do to your view on religion, or did you battle depression? Have you tried killing yourself after Agape? Have you went to prison? Or like I have to do the wording in a specific way, so like more people will be engaged, you know. I won't turn off people, but yeah. I think it's a good idea to get do some surveys and get some data behind it.
Yeah, for sure. And there are ways that and I'm sure you can like find a psychologist or like a trauma-informed counselor. There are ways to create those surveys so they are trauma-informed, so they don't force people to relive their trauma. Like, we have one for the Enthusiastic Sobriety Survivor community, and we worked with someone to make sure that it was trauma-informed. So all they had to do was kind of click boxes, click check boxes, and they didn't have to write out these long stories about like all the things that happened to them, because that's another reason why a lot of survivors don't come forward, right? Because we don't want to relive our trauma. We're embarrassed and ashamed by a lot of it. We've, you know, a lot of these places, like, they kind of indoctrinate and manipulate people into believing that if they speak out against the program, like, that there's something wrong with them and no one will believe them. And a lot of the backlash that we have gotten from like current members of these programs and staff is, oh, you're all just a bunch of angry people who didn't work hard enough, and so you're unhappy and you just want to blame it on somebody, right? So, I mean, just a lot of people don't come forward for those reasons. So it's helpful to have, you know, those surveys be really simple and easy for them to fill out. So, you know, I think that's probably a good place to start. But yeah, getting that data is so helpful, and it's so helpful for, like, you can send the data, like, sanitized, like, you don't want to have anybody's personal information, but just the statistics, you know, you can send to media outlets and ethics boards and all kinds of places and say, look, this is the data that we're getting. You can't argue with the data, you know. And that's for, you know, that's for anybody who is doing any kind of advocacy around this. It's like, get some data, get some hard data, because it will be very helpful for your cause. So
no, I would agree. That's something I've trying to gain steam here in the next couple of weeks to do. It's hard though, you know what I mean? I work so much, and then I spend 2 to 3 hours a day on Agape. And yeah. Talking to different people, talking to lawmakers, attorneys, or this or that, blah, blah, blah. Different survivors from different groups.
Awesome. Good, good, good. Yeah, and I'm happy to help in any way that I can, you know, just let me know. So, okay, so now we've got child labor, we've got lack of any kind of real education, and then we've got military style activities for like adolescents, like not even teenagers, like preteens. And now we've got corporal punishment. So tell me, like, give me, so we've kind of gone through what a day in the life is like for you. So did any of that happen to you? And again, if you're comfortable talking about it, if you're not, I totally understand. But give me tell me a little bit about your story. Like, how did you end up there for 6 years? And, you know, kind of, did you experience any of that that kind of treatment?
Yeah. So I, you know, the staff, I received a lot of bad treatment. So as well did almost every student there. You know, for one, when we try to communicate with our families and say, hey, this and this happened to us, or there's no telling anyone that.
Yeah. Like, that's pretty common. So did you guys experience, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just want to point this out. Like, did the staff tell your parents like, hey, you know, they're going to tell you they're having a really bad time because they just want to come home because they don't want to work? Like, was the staff kind of intervening between you and your parents?
Oh yeah, they would definitely manipulate them and say, hey, Robert or this kid is, you know, they're going to tell you this and that, or if they are telling you this and that, they just want to get out of here and they're not ready to come home yet. They still have some work to do. You know, I got letters back in my lawsuit that are absolutely damning. Like I talk about in these letters, I don't want to live life anymore.
Oh, like, God.
I wish I was dead. And you got to remember, this is like when I'm a kid. Like, I wish I was dead. Animals get treated better than us. Dead animals get treated better than us. I talked about like some physical abuse. I talked about like some sexual things that were happening. And I told this person nothing happened. You know, and at top of the letters, which I find even more damning than the letter itself, is that the staff wrote on top of these letters, "Hey, Robert needs to change this letter, or you need to look at this letter. There's a lot of changes that need to be made. Or this letter is full of lies. Robert is rewriting it now."
So that was that to like, was the staff reading your letters and like passing it on to someone who was going to make changes, or did they give it back to you and make you make changes to it?
They gave it back to me. You know, you have to make the school look good. Everything, you're having the time of your life. You're so happy. You know, there's a couple letters that are like, "Oh, I'm so happy. I love it here. Blah, 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 blah."
Oh my God, Robert.
You know, and
just fucked.
Yeah, no, it's hard to like, in my lawsuit, there's 9 specific letters that they say needed to be fixed. I only have 3 of them, but the 3 that I have are super incriminating against the school. Yeah. When I say I wanted to die there, like I tried killing myself there. I tried drinking bottles of chemicals. A lot of kids did. We had a period of time where a lot of kids would just drink bottles of Germex to try to die.
Oh, God.
Kids would hang themselves like on the bunk bed. Kids would like throw themselves down the stairs. And the answer always was, "Pray to Jesus. He'll help you." Well, like honestly, fuck Jesus.
At this point,
he's not doing anything to help me. Like, and I write that in my letter. I'm like, like they say, tell Jesus, like, why am I so miserable? Then why isn't he helping me? Blah blah blah.
Yeah. Why is he allowing these things to happen to me?
Yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, like when kids try to kill themselves. Like I work in a hospital. A kid tries to kill themselves. You have to report it to certain agencies.
Yeah, that's an incident report right there.
Yeah, and that never happened one time.
Oh, I'm sure it didn't.
And it does a lot to your mental health as well. You know, like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you just learn, like I learned after 6 years of there, just learning how to survive every day. And now, I don't want to say good thing about that. It's like a good thing about that now is like nothing that anyone does can get me mad. Like I've never been mad at a girlfriend or anyone, literally. Just because, like, what can be worse than agape?
Right.
Like, there's nothing that anybody in life can put me through that's worse than that. So, yeah. Like, I'll just go through the motions, or, you know, like, I literally learned how to survive there. So did so many other kids there.
Yeah, and not in a good way.
in a good way.
Like, I'm mad for you right now. So, like, I just can't. It's beyond me how people think that treating children this way is helping them. I just don't understand it. So, okay. So are you able to see your parents? Do you get time with them?
So my mom, while I was there, my mom never called, visited, or wrote me a letter. But my dad would come like maybe once every or twice a year, maybe for a couple of days, like 2 or 3 days at a time. And I went home like I think 2 or 3 times for 4 or 5 days each time. And I'd literally be begging my mom and dad to let me stay home. Like I did not want to go back to that place at all. Like please don't send me back. And my mom, like my dad wouldn't say anything in the conversation. It would be my mom and she'd be like, "Oh, we're afraid you're going to hang around the wrong people or this or that." But I'd never done that in my life. So like,
right.
What makes you think that now?
Yeah.
I never hung around bad people ever in my life.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. I want to go back in time and hug 13-year-old you. Like, I'm just so sorry all this happened to you. So, okay. So you're getting beaten too, right? Like,
we'd get So, for example, well, first thing, the school put out a public statement last year saying, hey, look, we've never restrained a kid more than 10 minutes, which is a damn lie. Like, in my file, there's reports of me being restrained for 2 hours at a time.
Well, 10 minutes is too long. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, like, and I'm a skinny, scrawny kid, and I'm getting restrained by four huge adults. You know, one's on one leg, one's on the other, one's... One's on each arm and one's on the legs, and usually one's on your neck. And they're literally, they can be punching you. They could be applying pressure to your pressure point. And sort of like, they'll be stop yelling, stop screaming. And all you're doing is like, you're screaming and crying because,
yeah, like, so get off me. Yeah.
It's like, how much of a threat can I be to like four adults that weigh like at least 250 pounds each?
Yeah, I mean, that's like a very natural reaction to having four huge men on top of you is screaming. Like,
yeah,
it would be against your nature to stop screaming at that point. Like, that's a hard switch to flip.
Yeah, and there was one kid there who got restrained for 9 hours.
Oh my God. Like, people laying on him for 9 hours?
Laying on him, throwing him, like, they had a room called a padded palace where the floor was padded and all the walls were padded. So they would like throw you around. They could do whatever. Like, kids would not be able to walk for a couple of days. Kids would have broken limbs or like bruises all over them, all bloody, you know. And like, the kid that got restrained for 9 hours, they were like, we're going to take you somewhere where no one can hear your screams.
Oh my God. And it's like a horror movie.
No, it is. And like, you could hear the screams from the dining room from downstairs, like kids yelling at the top of their lungs. Like, it just sends, like, when you're a kid, it just sends like shivers or chills down your spine.
Oh yeah. That's like, traumatizing.
Yeah. Just hearing the screams, even if you weren't being a part of it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of times where, you know, staff would like punch students, like, or bash you through, like, there was times where staff would literally slam kids through the wall, like make holes in the drywall with their head or bodies. Like, and none of the injuries ever got reported. That would get taken to Dr. David Smock's office, who was just arrested for molesting kids at the school.
Oh my God. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's another thing is according to the Cedar County financial statement from last year, there was an Agape staff working as the sheriff, and he's also a board of director for Agape Boarding School. Like, this, it's all public record. The dean of the school was employed by the sheriff's department. The dean's son was employed by the sheriff's department. The owner's granddaughter was employed by the sheriff's department. And the doctor's son was employed by the sheriff's department. So how can any time when someone, like a parent or a kid, runs away and they tell them, hey, this is happening, how can they be impartial when half of their department is employing members of the school?
Right.
It just doesn't, it just, the whole county is so corrupt there.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's just, it's a bad horror movie, and I am so sorry you dealt with that. Like, so what were their reasons for restraining you for so long? Like, what did you do to deserve to be restrained by four giant men?
So for that 2 hour restraint that's in my file, like, I literally was just not, like, I was on the wall at the time. And I was messing around talking to other students, and I called one of the staff members yes dear and yes ma'am. Like, I didn't insult anybody. Like, I wasn't a threat or like, you know, they're like, oh, we're like, they literally picked you up and carried you downstairs.
So they were just mad at you.
Yeah. If they were having a bad day, or if you looked at them wrong, or, you know, the simplest thing that, if you pissed them off in the simplest way, they could restrain you for however long they wanted to. You know, like,
yeah, that's such an abuse of power.
Like, if you yawned in church, sometimes you would get taken downstairs and get restrained.
Oh my God.
yeah, it was like, and I think I stood on the wall there for the longest at a time was for like 2 months. You just standing all day, every day.
I'm sorry. They made you, you couldn't sit down at all?
Mm-mm.
Could you go to the bathroom?
Yeah, I mean, maybe twice a day. When you sit down, it would like more than likely be night times for sleep.
So they did let you go to bed.
Yeah, they let you went, they let you go to bed.
But during the day, for what are we talking, 12 hours, you had to stand against a wall?
Probably more than that. Yeah, probably 12 to 14 hours just standing up all day.
With two bathroom breaks.
Yeah, it wasn't like, hey, I need to go to the bathroom. Okay, you can go to the bathroom. It's whenever.
Right, it was like timed.
Yeah, exactly. And your time in the bathroom was timed as well. You only had a certain amount of time to be in the bathroom.
Did you have to eat standing up?
Yep, you have to eat every meal standing up.
Jesus Christ. And so what did you do to warrant that kind of punishment?
Literally, it could be nothing. It could be, you know, mocking peer group or talking back one time. Or, you know, there was times where, like, a staff member would say, oh, Robert cheated me on my push-ups. He did 9 instead of 10, or he wasn't going all the way down on his push-ups. You know, all right, you're on the wall for a week or two.
Oh my God.
Every small infraction that you do, it would, okay, just extend this, extend that. You know, you weren't allowed to talk to other students. So I was, one of the main reasons there I was sent there is in my file, it said, my mom had said she wanted me to become more social. Well, we couldn't talk at a Gotham.
Right, you know, how's, right.
How's it making you more social?
Right, yeah, no, it's definitely not making you more social.
And it's messed me up today. Like, I think working at the hospital has really helped because yeah. I'm forced to talk to a lot of different people.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of helped me get out of my shell a lot more. But like with relationships and everything in life, it's done a lot more damage than it has good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I completely understand that. So was it all of these like minor infractions that caused you to end up there for 6 years? Like, how did that happen?
I honestly, I don't even know how I was there for 6 years. I really don't. There's not one thing that would have warranted me being there for longer than a year. I think, you know, my mom just didn't want me home. And my dad, like my mom was the general of the family. We call her the general even today.
Right.
Like, she made, like, dad made all the money and mom would just make all the decisions at the house.
Right.
I don't speak to my family anymore since I've spoken out about Agape, because they told me, hey, please stop talking about Agape. You're ruining our family name. Like, to me, that, like, set a fire in me.
Yeah.
Like, who doesn't want to help their kid? And this is not just me. It's a lot of kids who their families don't support at all.
Yeah.
When talking about the abuse.
Yeah.
I would think that most like loving parents would like, what can we do to help you or support you during like to help you in this time?
Yeah.
But none of that has ever happened. They like when I've spoken to my family a couple times recently, it's like it goes in one ear out the other, or they change subjects. I literally haven't spoken to them once since July. Like, I have no intention of ever speaking to them again.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I see a therapist usually once a week, and my therapist was like, just cut them out of your life because they're just so toxic for you.
Yeah.
They make me depressed. They make me.
Yeah. You know,
when I first told my mom about Agape a couple in July or June, she bought me a book. It was called like How to Unfuck Your Brain. Like I looked at it and I was like, really?
What?
Yeah. Like, I told my friend, like, my friends saw it and they're like my friends, all my friends hate my mom. Like,
I'm sorry. What is the point of How to Unfuck Your Brain? Like, what is it?
What does that even mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what is,
I mean, did you like read the back of it? Like, what is it even about?
No, I didn't even read any of it. I just saw the title and I got pissed off. Like, what does that even mean?
I'm sorry, I'm looking it up. I have to know. Using science to get over anxiety, depression, anger, freakouts, and triggers.
Yeah, stupid. It's called loving your kid.
Yeah, right. Supporting your child. Well, and the a no-nonsense and helpful guide on how to cope with a slew of mental health issues that are hell-bent on ruining the lives of millions of people worldwide. Oh, yeah, I'm definitely going to do a deep dive into this book.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, like, that's a trigger, just looking at the title, How to Unfuck. You're like, my brain doesn't.
Yeah.
I am perfectly fine. Like, I help abuse victims all the time at hospitals. Like, I don't need something called How to Unfuck Your Brain to help me. I need, like, love and support from my family.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I am like, my brain is broken right now. Like, I cannot get my head around all of it. Like, it's just, yeah. Oh my fucking God. Okay. So, and I'm sure, you know, there's definitely, this is the other problem with for-profit, private institutions like this, is they're also still getting money from your parents, right? So they're convincing your parents you need to stay there. So what was it back then? 30, 40 grand a year?
Yeah, probably around that. Yeah.
So we're looking at, they made, you know, a good almost $200,000 off your parents.
Yeah. And when you think about it, like, my older sister went to Harvard. My second sister went to Brown. My other sister went to UM. My other sister went to FAU. Agape was more than all those schools.
Right. Right.
Like,
yeah.
Literally, what are you paying for? Like, you know, in 2004, 3 years before I got sent to school, like, there was a staff member there who was charged and convicted of molesting a 13-year-old student there.
Yeah.
And why didn't the state intervene at that time?
Yeah.
You know, it just doesn't make any sense. And, like, I don't know how well you are aware of the investigation that just took place. Well, the local prosecutor in the county of Agape asked the governor for help because he said there's too many victims. Like, my office isn't big enough to interview everyone. So the governor assigned the attorney general to help him. And the attorney general wrote, I think the attorney general recommended 70 plus charges against 22 staff members. And the local prosecutor did not listen to one of the charges, not one of the 70 plus charges. So why even ask the governor for help if you're not going to listen to anything? Yeah. Like, and the charges that the local prosecutor brought forth, were, he labeled them all as Class E felonies. Like, the medical director there got charged for using a metal scouring pad to rub away a kid's tattoo. Like, it went all the way down to his bone.
Oh my God.
Like, how is that a Class E felony? Another staff member there got charged for pushing a kid down the stairs and then grabbing his head and choking him against the floor. Like, that's a Class E felony. One staff member got charged there for slamming a kid against a wall. Another staff member got charged for stomping on a kid's hands. Like, I would get in more trouble for a parking ticket or running
right,
a red
light. Right.
Then I would, like, it just doesn't make sense to me, any of the stuff that's going on. And then with the doctor of the school, Agape Boarding School. So the doctor was David Smock, and he was charged with molesting a kid, like 15 different counts. And the prosecutor said there's more kids who came forth against the doctor. So I anticipate more charges. But the local prosecutor handed over the doctor's case to a special prosecutor who requested the attorney general to help him in that case, because the doctor of the school was the prosecutor's personal doctor as well. So how come he handed over the doctor's case but not the Agape case to somebody else? I mean, that's highly unethical and such a conflict of interest.
Have you been able to get any answers to that? Like, why they didn't bring forward any charges?
So there's two parts of that. I've actually a case with Missouri Supreme Court since early last month that's actually still open. I'm surprised it's still open and they haven't tossed it. And that's to request a new prosecutor. And as of yesterday, it was still open and they are still trying to, they're still looking into it, but the prosecutor said that he can't be the, I forget the exact wording he used, but he said something along the lines like, parents have the right to discipline their kids.
Oh my God.
But like, this is way beyond disciplining your kids. This is abusing kids. You know?
Well, and these aren't your parents.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. That's ridiculous.
He said he doesn't want to get involved in that part of it. Like, so, I mean, I think you should just step aside, honestly.
So basically what they're saying is that your parents all signed off on this shit, which they did not.
Yeah, they didn't sign off on us getting abused, you know?
Yeah. They didn't know about it.
No, exactly.
So you've mentioned your lawsuit a couple times. So do you want to talk a little bit more about that, about what kind of lawsuit you're filing?
So I think I filed a lawsuit in August, my lawyers. I think there's 8 current lawsuits against Agape. I know my lawyers are filing 8 more lawsuits, I think either next week or the week after. So there's going to be about 20 open cases against the school, which is good.
I
think it puts a lot more pressure on state officials as well to act and close the school. And then I believe there's also a class action about to be filed against the school. So there could be anywhere from 30 to 40 different kids suing the school, which is great.
Yeah.
I think the more, the more kids, the better. Yeah. You know, from a whole bunch of different angles, you know, like from, you know, just putting the school out of business, maybe their insurance company dropping them, to putting a whole bunch of more pressure on the politicians in Missouri, as well as Department of Social Services to do something. Because, I mean, we did just get a law passed in Missouri, which is, I mean, it's a good law, but it's bare minimum, you know, like it requires background checks now. Before, that wasn't mandatory. It requires like unrestricted access to, like, if you're a parent of a kid, you can show up there and see your kid without giving the school like a month or two notice.
Good.
But even on their website today, they're not even complying with the law, because they're saying on their website, oh, you can't see your kid under this or this reason. Like, he has to be here for at least 30 days before you can see your kid. So they're not, and no one's enforcing it. Like, in the law, it says that the DSS or the AG or the local prosecutor have power to remove the kids, but nobody's removed them. There's still about 40 to 50 kids at Agape right now. A lot of parents have removed their kids because normally Agape runs between 130 to 160 kids.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of parents have removed their kids just because all the national headlines the school has made.
Good.
Yeah, I wonder what the other 40 parents are thinking.
Right, yeah. I mean, there's still 40, 50 kids who are getting abused there. God, that's horrible. Well, I'm glad that you're taking some action. I think that's really healthy. I think it's really healthy for all survivors if there's a way that they can especially take legal action against their abusers. It's incredibly healing. To be able to say, like, it's not okay that you did this to me, and the United States of America agrees with me, you know, like, that's.
If, I mean, just another thing, like, you know, there was a time there when I was getting a haircut, and a staff member there wrapped a cord around my neck and literally was choking me, where other students and staff had to, like, literally rip, like, push the staff member away to, like, get the cord off of my neck, and he only got suspended for 3 days.
Jesus Christ.
Like, my family was never notified. The SS was never notified. You know, it's just, and I have proof of it as well, which, like, I'll hold until, like, for my lawsuit. But it's just, like, when is enough enough? You know?
Yeah. No, totally. I mean, it is enough. It's already enough.
Yeah. It's just, like, I feel like even if a kid died there, like, the state would still not act.
Yeah.
When hundreds of boys have come forward saying the same thing, literally hundreds and hundreds of boys have said, yes, this happened there, or this happened to me, or I saw this. Like, what are they waiting for?
Yeah.
I just every day they don't act, I'm like more at a loss for words.
Yeah. Yep.
Because I just don't get it at all. Like when people come to the hospital and like we suspect they're abused, you know, we notify the DSS or the sheriff's department.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then they act and they separate them. Nothing's like DSS, the sheriff's department, the governor's office, every office in Missouri knows about Agape. And nobody's taking action.
Yeah, I have my two best friends. One is a forensic nurse and the other works for DPS in Ohio. And I mean, I hear the stories from them of reasons that they remove kids or that they involve the police. And I'm like, this is shit that happens in, you know, boarding schools all over the United States all the time. And nobody's doing anything about it. And it's unacceptable. It's just unacceptable. And again, I'm just so sorry that all this happened to you. It's just.
Well, if you look at the UN had a, I forget the name of the certain thing in the UN, but they had a like a bill or some whatever you want to call it in the UN that got passed. And it was countries against child abuse. Now, every country in the UN signed off on it, even China. And there's only one country out of like the 198 that didn't sign off, and it was the United States.
The United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child.
Yeah, and like why, like I would think the US would be leading first and foremost on issues like that. But yeah. I mean, they're not.
When
you really like, how can China sign off on something like that, or all these other countries sign off on something like that and not the United States?
Well, it's what you said earlier. It's parents should be allowed to discipline their kids how they choose. It's that whole shtick that's very, roots are in Christianity.
Yeah. I don't think I'll honestly ever step foot in another church again. Like,
yeah, no, me either. Me either. I understand that. So you've got the lawsuit going, you're out, you've been out for 9 years, which is like, I'm sure is also healing in its own way, but you know, just time. I mean, time for me has helped a lot. I have CPTSD and I still have nightmares and, you know, dreams about that place. And I've been out for shit, almost 13 years now, you know, It's people need to understand it's not something that ever goes away. Like it changes your life in a way that you don't ever go back to like how you were before, you know, like that doesn't happen.
I think for me, the most healing part of everything has just been talking to survivors from different schools.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's somebody who's always had it worse than you. So when you think, hey, look, I had it bad. I was here at a school for 6 years. And then you speak to somebody else who was at a school for 1 year, but their experience in 1 year was way worse. You know, like, I think, like, just hearing everyone else's stories, because I'm involved in, like, a lot of different groups. I think that's just been, like, the most healing thing. And seeing, like, different people who, like, I'm involved in groups where nobody went to any of these schools, but they want to help in any way they can.
Yeah.
So like, absolutely. Even seeing that is help, like healing in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm so grateful when people reach out to me from other places, because I'm like, yes, let's do it. Like, let's, you know, like I've got kind of a proven formula for like helping people get in front of, you know, the media and just other survivors. And I love it. You know, I love being a part of helping other people and from other programs tell their stories and have a platform where they can finally speak and be believed and listened to and supported. You know, like it's incredible. It's a great it's not something I thought would come out of me starting this podcast, but I'm really, really glad that it happens, you know?
I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure a lot more people have been affected in a positive way with your podcast. You know, it's,
I hope so.
One last thing I do want to touched on is, you know, just as well as the sexual abuse at Agape.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to get too much into detail in it just because it's very uncomfortable. You know, I was molested by another student there. I reported it to the staff there. They didn't do anything. They didn't call my family. You know, it almost happened again. There was kids who would molest other kids there all the time. You know, take another kid into the bathroom with like just a little kid, you know, older kids with little kids.
Yeah.
There's staff members who would allegedly molest other kids. There's one lawsuit who I speak with the mom of the son, and you know, her son said that the staff members there gang raped him, like four staff members.
Oh my God.
And like would stick foreign like broom handles and other stuff.
Oh no.
Like how can, like when you hear stuff like that, just like, don't you want to protect the kids? Like,
yeah.
Don't you want to, like, a school like that has no business being open.
Yeah.
I mean, there was one kid there who didn't want to be there. So like he literally tried everything to get sent away, and he ended up literally eating his own shit. Like he would literally like poop in his bed and like eat his own shit. And they sent him away to like, they said they sent him away to like a different like mental facility. But like, I've never been able to contact or find that guy again. So, you know, just like kids would try to do the most reprehensible thing to try to get sent away there. But nothing, like literally nothing ever worked. Like kids would run away. Sheriff would bring them back. Tell the sheriff, hey, they're beating us. They're doing this and that to us. Oh, and you're just back. The sheriffs don't do an investigation or anything. All of it. Like, you know, the reason I speak is I want closure and justice. And the only way I can get closure is knowing that they can't hurt any other little kid there. You know, so like, I'll keep like pressing on. Like, to me, a lot of people say like, I've gotten, and a lot of other people too, I've gotten the same thing. Like, why don't you move on? Blah, blah, blah. Like, I have moved on. Like,
God. Yeah. Yeah. I can't. Yeah. I can't handle when people say that shit to me. Yeah.
Like, we have moved on, and we're trying to see, like, I think I've done a lot in my life, but I want to prevent this from happening to other kids, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's the main thing, is preventing a kid from going through what I went through, or what you went through, or what somebody else went through.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a horribly insensitive thing for people to say. And it, from my experience, it comes from a place of people just being very uncomfortable, processing the things that happened to us. You know, they just don't know how to process it. They don't know how to support us. They don't know how to be there for us. So they just say like, can you just get over it, so I don't have to deal with it anymore, because it makes me very uncomfortable, you know? And you're right. Like, I have moved on technically. I have a great life. Like, I'm happy. I have a family that I love and a job that I love, and I'm healthy, and, you know, I have a great life. But like I said, I also have CPTSD. I have nightmares still. I have, you know, these triggers that, you know, can come out of nowhere. And like I said, it's changed me. And so to some extent, you know, yes, we can move on, but it's hard to move on from something that is still affecting me today. Yes, absolutely. I want to stop it from happening to anyone else. And yeah, I want justice. You know, yes, I want the people who abused me to pay for what they did. Absolutely. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, nothing. There's
nothing wrong with that at all.
Mm-mm. No. And you doing what you're doing is fantastic. And it's like incredibly brave. And the fact that you are like a functioning human being is a testament to like your strength, you know, and your, don't give them any fucking credit for who you are and where you are today, because you're here because of your own inner drive to survive and live and like become who you've always wanted to be in spite of those assholes.
You know? No, literally. I do want to thank like people like I don't speak to them that much once in a blue moon, like Caroline Cole, Paris, like Meg Applegate.
Yeah.
The Unsilenced, the We Warned Them campaign, like there's a lot of people I know I'm not gonna say. But you know, it's just one small step at a time. You can't just wake up and there's a whole bunch of change one day.
Right.
You just gotta keep grinding away and you know, one small step at a time. That's all you can do.
Yeah, and take lots of breaks. I have to take lots of breaks, you know.
No, literally, yeah. You have to take breaks once in a while. You can't get too carried away.
Yeah. Oh goodness, Robert. So just to kind of tie this up. No, I don't want to say that. That's weird. kind of, you know, as the kind of cherry on top of all of this, what are you doing today? Like, tell me a little bit about what your life is like today and what you're doing.
So now I work in a hospital. Mm-hmm. I am going to school to be an ICU nurse. I want to work in the ICU. I love helping people. That's like, I would literally get like the shirt off of my back to somebody else. And that's like one of my weaknesses too, is that like I help people way too much and don't look after myself. You know, speaking.
I understand that.
Yeah, no, speaking to politicians. And I think a lot of them are open to hearing me out just because I'm like, I work in a hospital, I have a lawsuit. Like I'm trying to be as proactive as possible.
Yeah.
Getting involved with a lot of LGBTQ groups as well. I think those people are very important, centric to our movement.
Yeah.
I think, just working with everyone, because I think the more people that you can work with, even though you have differing views, a lot of times is, to me, the more people helping, the better. Like, I don't care about what you think about this issue or you care about this issue or blah, blah, blah. Like, to me, the more the merrier. And, you know, we're stronger together. And that's about it, really.
Yeah. And how can people, like, you know, once this podcast comes out, if there are other survivors who listen to it, are you open to people contacting you, or like, how can people get in touch with you and kind of the group you're working with to support survivors and take some action against Agape?
Well, I'm open to talking to anybody that wants to talk about any of these issues, whether they've been through them or whether they haven't been through them and they want to help, even if they haven't been through any of them and they just want to understand. Like, I'm more than happy for anyone to email me. Because I check my email every day.
Yeah.
Which I'll share my email with you. Maybe you can like post it below.
Yeah. I'll put it in the show notes for sure.
Yeah. Or like reach out on my Facebook, Robert Buck. I check my messages all the time. Like, I've heard from, like, I just had a mom reach out to me, and like my Facebook account is public. So she was like, I was going to send my kid to Agape, but I was doing some research and I ran across your profile and I'm not going to send, she was like, just rest assured, I'm not going to send my kid there. And I gave her my number and she was like, I don't even need to call you because I've seen all that I need to see on your profile. Which I know a lot of people don't post stuff on their personal profiles, but like I don't care. The more people that see what's going on, the better. It's happiness when I can speak to other people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. I get that. And you're doing so much good. Like,
we all are, you know, it's bigger than me. It's bigger than I think Paris Hilton has been a centric part of it in the sense that, you know, she's a bigger name. So, which kind of sucks in a way. Like, it shouldn't take a big name to get all these issues heard. But at the same time, we need more people like her to, because I'm sure she's not the only one sent to an abusive school.
You know? For sure.
Yeah. I'm sure there's others, but I give her mad kudos and props to everything that she's done.
Yes.
That's about it.
I totally, and I completely agree. For me, it's bigger than me, and it's not about me, and I'm not the only one doing this work, but because I'm speaking to you right now, I want to tell you, like, what you're doing is doing good, and like your part of it is important and valuable, and I think it's awesome. And thank you, you know, thank you for speaking up for survivors, and you know, really kind of taking that risk to speak against people that are this abusive. It's because it's hard and it's scary, and I know it, you know. So I just wanted to give you a big thank you for that.
You know, it's also people like you, you know, we need people who are willing to let us use their platform to tell our stories. You know, it's, I for myself, I found it very easy to, like, almost everyone I reach out to is like, yeah, let's do an interview or let's do a podcast. Like, I have like five more of these scheduled here in the next weeks.
Good.
But it's like, I'm very thankful and very appreciative for the people that are willing to help us and listen and use their platform to help us as well.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And that's one of the things I like about, you know, the name of this podcast was the group chat when we first started, because that's what in Enthusiastic Sobriety Programs, the group of clients basically is called the group. And so, and it's a pretty well-known, you know, moniker in Enthusiastic Sobriety Programs. And then we decided to change it, and we changed it to On the Emmis, because that's something that it's kind of harkens back to 2005, when a group of survivors did the same thing. And like our movement would not be where it is today without that group of survivors. So part of it was kind of, you know, to honor them. But the other part of it is because On the Emmis means telling the truth, right? Emmis is stems from a Hebrew word that means truth. And so when you say you're on the Emmis, you're saying I'm telling the truth, right? And I like that it's that's what it is, because it applies to, it doesn't just apply to Enthusiastic Sobriety abuse survivors. It applies to all survivors, you know, like you're here telling your truth. You're here on the Emmis, you know, and I like that the podcast has that kind of umbrella of like anybody who wants to come tell the truth can come tell the truth. You know, they don't have to be from a certain place. So I am just so glad that, you know, we connected and that we did this. And, you know, again, I'm just, my heart breaks for, you know, teenage you and, you know, that you had to endure all of that. And I'm just so, I'm happy that you're happy, and I'm happy that you're taking steps to like heal from all of this and help other people not have to go through it. I just, you know, just good stuff.
Yeah. Once, you know, like I said, one small, anything I can do to help anyone else, I'm more than willing to do it.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on. And this will probably be up in a couple of weeks, and I'll definitely, you know, I'll have a lot of information about Agape around the time that this podcast goes live, and we'll make sure that we do our best to get in front of the people that we need to get in front of.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you, Jacqueline.
All right. Thanks, Robert. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
So that was Robert. And I just, you know, I give him so much credit. He's working so hard to do whatever he can do to bring some awareness to what's happening at Agape and really take action to get justice for himself and for other people. And especially, you know, the 40, 50 kids who are there now. So, you know, if you, like I said, if you have a minute, you know, go follow Robert on all the social media platforms. you know, tweet at him, send him a message, whatever. Just let him know that you support him, because it can feel very like lonely and isolating when you're doing stuff like that. And because of the kind of indoctrination we get in these programs, there's also this tiny seed of like, am I crazy? Like, is this all fine? Because you have so many people who are, for whatever reasons, everybody has their reasons, who are defending the place and saying that, you know, the things that happened to you there didn't actually happen. And it's hard. So send Robert some support, and I will link all of his social media in the show notes. So to learn more about our podcast and our movement, definitely the one place that's going to have all the information is our website, enthusiasticsobrietyabuse.com. And you can also find our link tree, which is linktree.com/onthemspod. And that's going to, you know, have a bunch of different links to, you know, media about Bob Meehan's programs, other nonprofits who are doing good work in this area, anti-MLM stuff. There's just a lot. And you can find On the MS podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at On the MS. I'm actually doing a series on TikTok right now, which has been so much fun, where I'm doing, I'm kind of going through like how the movement started and its roots in, you know, the 2005 community that started this movement. And I'm going through some of the asinine shit that Bob Meehan has said over the years and kind of pointing out the insanity of it. So TikTok is going to be really fun for the foreseeable future. And I'm really new to it, so I'm figuring it out. So don't judge me, but follow me. And like I said, please go subscribe to the YouTube channel On the MS Pod, and, you know, anywhere else that you can find us, please like, follow, whatever. Go ahead and review us if you do like the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. I found out there's been this like renewed campaign of like current group members to give the podcast 1-star reviews. So it's like pulling down my rating, which is fine. I don't really care about that. What I do care about is people finding the podcast, which is important. And every time, you know, I got like 3 or 4 emails this past week of people who'd found the podcast and felt like it really helped them. And I got to talk to them, and a lot of stuff has come from that. So the one reason I do care about our reviews is so that people will find the podcast, because that's what's really important. So if you have time, go give it a 5-star review. And if you want to like, 5-star rating. And if you want to actually leave a review, that would be great too, but you don't have to. What else? We are ramping up to get a survivors fund going here. So we've got 2 ways that you can donate to that. You can donate to at our Venmo, which is OTE donate. So On the MS donate. And you can also shop to donate. So on Redbubble, we have a store that has Believe Survivors merchandise. I'm probably going to put up some On the MS podcast merchandise soon. And there's not a huge profit margin in any of that, but every little bit helps. So all of that will go to the Survivors Fund, and some of it will go to back into the podcast to kind of pay some of the expenses for the podcast. And thank you so much for those of you who have donated and who have purchased merchandise. I really, really appreciate it. All the expenses are coming out of my pocket. So it's helpful to have some support there. So again, you can always find us on all the socials at On the MS or On the MS Pod. You can go to our link tree, which is linktree.com/onthemspod, or you can go to the website, which is enthusiasticsobrietyabuse.com, and find all of our links there. If you have questions, topic recommendations, or you want to come on the podcast, you can email us directly at onthemspod@gmail.com. We also have a hotline where you can text or leave voicemails, and that number is on our Instagram, 404-537-2392. So please use any of those options to get in touch with me if you need anything at all. And that's it for today. I hope everyone has a fantastic day and you're staying safe, taking your meds, and know that we hear you, we see you, and we believe you. Bye.